Hello and welcome to the As Yet Unnamed London Theatre Podcast. This time I'm joined by Gareth James and Paul in London. We're now going to talk about Dance Nation at the Almeida Theatre. This is a play by Claire Barron, which won the Susan Smith Blackburn Prize and Relentless Award in America. We are dealing with a group of pre-teenage young women and one boy who are taking part in dance competitions, hoping to get to the big final. And it really is an investigation of this. It's directed by Bijan Shabani, with choreography by Aidan David and set design by Samal Black. The cast includes Brendan Cowell, Nancy Crane, Carla Crome, Miranda Foster, Sarah Hadland, Kyla Makel, Irfan Shamji, Majinder Verk, and Ria Sumitrovich. Gareth, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, it's ostensibly about the competitive dancing circuit for young teens in America, and it's a very American play. But it's really more about growing up and about searching for our individual identity, really. And I must admit, I kind of struggled to engage with it at all, to be honest. It starts off, I think, quite well, because we are seemingly looking at this dancing circuit, and the dance teacher, Pat, is laying out the route to the nationals, which is going to first take them to Philadelphia and Akron, Ohio, and then Tampa, Florida. And he tells them he's created a routine about Gandhi, only to discover they don't really know who Gandhi is, which is quite funny. So the dance competition journey is actually quite funny. It captures this kind of obsessive way Americans take competition. You know, there's for kids. So, you know, you have beauty pageants and you have spelling competitions and you have dance competitions. And that's why I think it's a very American play, although some of those things are no doubt creeping into this country as well now. I have to confess, it took me a while, because I hadn't read anything about it beforehand, it took me a while to realize that the cast, who are sort of all ages and indeed all shapes, sizes and races, are all playing 13-year-olds. So I don't know whether that's me or whether that it wasn't expressly laid out. And the show really is a bit like a chorus line, the musical chorus line, structurally, because what they do is they step out of the dance and they tell their individual stories. And that's exactly what happens in a chorus line, except they're self-obsessed tales of insecurity in the theatrical world. So the part of the play that is the heart of the play, which is the stories, this growing up stories, I just really didn't identify with, really. I mean, they're filled with preoccupations of kids of that age, of menstruation and masturbation. And it's all about their hopes and dreams. And it just lost me, I'm afraid. I thought that it was very well performed. I liked the design very much. The Samuel Black sort of mirrored dance studio set and the mirrors revolve to become sort of competition stages and dressing rooms. I thought that was really excellent. And the seven girls are all excellent. I would pick out Miranda Foster because she doubles up to play the dance moms as well as playing one of the more minor girls in the dance. And then, of course, Irfan Shamji, who's the only boy. He's the sort of solitary boy dancer in the troupe. And I thought he handled that very well as well. And Brendan Cowell, although this is hardly Yerma or Galileo, things we've seen him in recently. I mean, it's good to see him back, but it's not a particularly challenging part for him. It's interesting to see him camping it up a little bit rather than the sort of angst and other things he's done in other productions. So I admired it. I admired the production, I think, rather than enjoyed it. Because it was just far away from my life and any experience I can identify with, really. And I really just didn't engage, I'm afraid. What did you think, Tim?
Well, the thing I most engaged with, actually, was the relationship between Amina, played by Carla Crome, and Zuzu, played by Ria Zimitrovich. Zuzu is the person with a lot of ambition and she's struggling and she's almost good enough to go on to a regional conservatoire of dance. But Amina is this absolutely fantastic natural dancer who is likely to go to sort of Paris or Russia in order to study dance further. And she is so much better than Zuzu. And that particular relationship of jealousy, I thought, worked extremely well, you know, between somebody who is good enough for the locality, but not necessarily going to be a star. And especially when you see Amina Karlachrome dancing later. I was very interested to look at her credits because there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of dance credits in there, but I did find her dancing, and a lot of the choreography I thought was very good, but her dancing in particular was very, very special, I thought. But yeah, it felt a little bit odd. I mean, it just made you feel, I'm not a preteen girl. I've never been a preteen girl. I don't quite understand this. And I think that there is perhaps that difference of opinion. You know, we've got a couple of old men here talking about, well, not necessarily massively old, but older men not understanding what it's like and not being engaged by it. And I wasn't entirely engaged. I did feel a little bit out of it because of, you know, not feeling that I knew enough about, you know, what it's like for them. Sometimes not really catching on to the fact that they're playing a naughty word game at one point because it's a bad thing to do because they're little children. And you sometimes lose the idea that they're little children in this, although you don't feel how young they are, but you always buy into the idea that they are playing sort of young girls. You never lose that, but you sometimes lose the idea of just how young these girls are, and sometimes you're thinking, you know, they're slightly older teenagers, but they are supposed to be very young, and I didn't always catch that. But I mean, I just was impressed by the whole setup of the play. The performances I thought were very impressive, and also, you know, the dance numbers I thought were very well done, and the choreography was very well performed. But yeah, like you, perhaps I didn't really catch on to it. I didn't really get it in some ways or relate to it in some ways, which is a bit of a pity. But overall, I mean, it is a very well put together piece. It's just something that the Almeida does do strange plays, but even when it does the strangest of its plays, it does them extremely well. This is an American import. This is something like Mr. Burns or something like that, where, you know, maybe we don't get it. Maybe this play is understood much more by Americans. Maybe we don't understand it enough, not just because it is about competitive dancing in America, which we have to a certain extent, but it feels more lighthearted. You know, it feels a little bit more silly when you look at it. We've just had Strictly Dancing coming back, and obviously it reminds you that there are ballroom competitions, and you have very young people doing ballroom competitions all around the country and dressing up in a very particular way, which we might look on as ridiculous, but we don't have the same dancing here. I mean, you're always a bit worried that it's going to turn dark and there's going to be some nastiness in there, but there is no real nastiness in this play. They are being put into this adult competitive situation, perhaps, but it doesn't really deal with any of the potential dark sides of it. Most of the characters are fun characters, but there's no real terrible darkness. I think if this was done by, you know, a British writer, there would have been, you know, a lot more dark themes and a lot nastier. She's not interested in that kind of dark theme, those kind of dark ideas, the writer, and she just wants to show that the struggles, the jealousies, the way that they have to be pushed to work hard. This is in some ways a slightly innocent play, and perhaps that's what the writer wants. We're now going to talk about The Prisoner at the Dorfman Theatre. This is a play written and directed by Peter Brook and Marie-Hélène Estienne. It stars Hiran Abeysekera, Hervé Goffings, Omar Silva, Kaliswari Srinivasan, and Donald Sumter. It takes place in an imagined country. You feel it's maybe perhaps an African country, but only because the two principals that we see have a kind of African feel to them. But since it is a very multicultural cast, we're never entirely sure where it is. The idea here is that a traveller, played by Donald Sumter, is told to go and visit a local wise man. And the local wise man tells a story of his nephew, who is camped out near a large prison. And we get to see the story of why this young man is camped out. He finds his father in bed with his sister and basically kills his father. And for punishment, instead of going to the prison, he is made to sit outside and watch the prison and look at the prison. That is his punishment. But he's there to watch it. And around the prison, he encounters people like the local villagers who find him rather peculiar, although eventually one of the villagers befriends him. And also he sometimes encounters prison guards or even prisoners who are suggesting he might want to go into the prison. But he is this man sitting alone looking at the prison, and that is his punishment for patricide, essentially. It's one of these simple fabulistic stories that Peter Brook does. I mean, I didn't see in the blurb whether it's based on a short story that Peter Brook and Marie-Hélène Estienne have taken, that they have adapted, or something that they have come up out of whole cloth. But quite a lot of the plays that we've seen from Peter Brook coming into London in the recent years have been kind of based on original texts. For me, as always, when I watch a Peter Brook play, it suffers from the thing I've always mentioned when I talk about when I've mentioned Peter Brook. It's that I've seen plays directed by people who've been influenced by Peter Brook. I live in a world which, you know, already has Peter Brook in it, so he can't really show me anything I haven't seen before. And he does seem to have this a very particular idea of doing plays. I mean, there is a sort of almost a sameness to them. We don't, in this case, get the large cloth spread on the ground, but certainly people are wrapping themselves in sheets and things like that, which is something that I've seen quite a lot in his plays. It's a very simple set. You know, it's not like they're using modern equipment to clean the set up. It will always be brushes. There's a lot of scattered wood and bushes. It's sort of an arid sort of semi-desert place that this prison is in, and the prisoner of the title, this young nephew, his sort of camp is very basic within it. So it's a very simple set, but at the same time, you know, there's a fair bit of clutter on it. I've never really disliked any Peter Brook plays I've seen. I've just not caught the Peter Brook bug. I've never really got what all the fuss about Peter Brook is, and it is always a bit of a problem when I'm watching his plays. It's not that I don't enjoy them, but I don't really know what he's on about and what he wants to happen. So I enjoyed what I saw, but I'm not entirely sure that I got deep on this play. It was impressively done, but I wasn't sure that I really got it as such. I always feel I'm going to be missing something with Peter Brook, and I think I probably missed a lot here. What did you think about it, Gareth?
Well, I saw this at the Edinburgh Festival in the Royal Lyceum Theatre, as part of the main festival, because Peter Brook's company, the Theatre de Bouffe de Nord, were in residence, as it were. And in addition to this, they also had a version of Beggar's Opera. So it was competing with 22 other shows I saw over a 7-day period. And it doesn't really come out that well in that comparison. I mean, most of the sort of modern work in the Travers Theatre was just jumping out as being way, way, way better. And I think the crux of the problem with this, because I have seen most of Peter Brook's work in the UK, and the crux of it here is that it isn't an adaptation, that is actually seems to be an original piece that was workshopped by the company. And I think that might be the problem, that he's not adapting something, but he's actually creating something. And I mean, we've been in this minimalist period, as I now call it, for a very long time. And I'm kind of hankering back and yearning for the days, you know, when he did just amazing things like the Mahabharata in three parts in an old tram shed in Glasgow. It was a really epic theatre. But we've been in this minimalist period now for a while, and we've had very lovely things like the costume, the suit, and other pieces. And he's been at the Young Vic quite a bit in recent years, again, with these small minimalist pieces. But of all of them, this is the one that didn't work for me. I think it's a very slight piece. It's only 70 minutes long. And it kind of left me hungry. It just didn't fill me up, as it were. And I felt that it needed better writing or dramaturgy, really. The performances were good. I thought the design was very elegant and attractive. It was slow, and a lot of the coming onto the stage and going off the stage was sort of slowing it down quite a bit. But the fundamental issue with the play is I felt the material was weak. So it's disappointing. He is now 93, I think. It's disappointing to have to say that about a piece of work by someone whose career has been so illustrious, but one has to tell the truth. It was a slight piece that I'm afraid disappointed me.
We're now going to talk about Square Rounds at the Finborough Theatre. This is a play by Tony Harrison, written over 30 years ago and hasn't actually been performed for 30 years. It's brought to us by Proud Haddock, who've done other plays such as The Trekkers' Oxyrhynchus at the Finborough, but also the subject of Scandal and Concern, and Mrs. Orwell, which did really quite well and transferred to one or two places. It's directed here by Jimmy Waters, with a cast that includes Eva Thaler, Gracie Goldman, Regine Green, Amy Marchant, Philippa Quinn, and Nettie Thomas. And we are telling the story of really Hiram Maxim and Fritz Haber. We're telling a lot of other things, but it's how scientists and people got involved in the First World War and how that led to the slaughter being much more pronounced in the First World War. Sir Hiram Maxim was the inventor of the machine gun, and the Fritz Haber, as well as being the inventor of the Haber process for fixing nitrogen, was also the man who was the father of chemical warfare, and his chlorine gas was used moderately effectively in the First World War against people, but obviously the other later gas attacks were much more effective. Paul, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, thanks, Tim. Yes, actually, interestingly, the title Square Rounds, which you learn in the piece, refers to the bullets reserved for the enemy that caused a more painful death. And actually, in the context of the First World War, they were mostly used against the Ottoman Empire, so the Muslim forces, the Turkish. So that was an interesting aside, actually, in this. But the other thing was that this is the first production of Tony Harrison's anti-war polemic in almost, I think it was about 20-something years, when it was first staged at the Olivia Theatre at the National. And there it was quite grand by all accounts and quite sumptuously staged. Here we get a much more small-scale production, obviously, because the FIB was a much smaller space. But what's interesting is that Howard Haddock, which is a small production company that do interesting things, and have again managed to, you know, make this piece quite relevant, I think, for the times, because actually a lot of the themes about reconciling between science and the political aims of the day, strong men and real politics, all of these things seem to be almost back in fashion as well, in terms of what these people and characters were struggling with around the First World War, about inventing more dangerous weapons and the rationale behind them. But also what's fascinating is it's portrayed all by women, because the context is that the women were actually doing all the work behind the scenes, because all the men were either fighting the war or killed. So against this backdrop, you know, you've got these grand stories that are being told about the struggles between science and basically the warring sides as to what should happen. You know, the other interesting thing is, you know, the set is completely black and white, and just like the world of science, but actually during the war, the scientists actually have to struggle with the rationale and the ethics behind what they're doing. There's a wonderful scene where Fritz Haber is, you know, struggling with the argument for why he's inventing poisonous gases, and that he believed that it was better because at least you could bury a body intact rather than have it shot to pieces thanks to machine gun fire and other weapons that were being used in the trenches. So it's quite a shock, actually, having all these discussions. But, you know, the cast served this material very well, you know, led particularly by Philippa Quinn, who was excellent in the Just to Get Married piece that was at the Finborough last year. I think it's quite a strong polemical piece, though. So actually, in that context, you do have to actually take it for what it is, probably, rather than actually as a piece of theatre, you know, trying to actually tell a story. But I think the production does this, serves this quite well to actually explain the great struggles of the piece in a smaller scale production. And I think at the end, it is quite well done and quite effective in what they've sought out to achieve. It moves quite quickly. There's a lot of stories they cover and a lot of interrelated characters that come up. And I think, you know, it's quite well done and quite fascinating given the time.
I was a little bit disturbed when suddenly they broke into rhyme early in the play, and I thought, oh God, it's going to be a rhyming play, but it worked quite well.
It does work. Yeah.
After a little bit of faltering towards the start, where they hit every rhyme and it feels very artificial, it does calm down, settle down and work. I don't remember anything about the original production of this play, although I was around at the time and occasionally going to the National Theatre when it was done in 1992. So I don't remember anything about this production, and I can't remember if it was done using an all-women cast, but I did think it worked with an all-women cast for this particular play, where they're starting off, of course, as sort of factory workers, these people who are, certainly in Britain, you know, they were, I think, sometimes known as canaries because they were turned yellow, their skin was turned yellow by the chemicals that they were exposed to. There's some very unpleasant truths about some of the women who had to work in those conditions, and you know, the idea that there were some buildings which were just a very tiny hut, but they were surrounded enormous earth embankments, because if and when they made a mistake and the explosives went off, it would only kill the people in the hut, it wouldn't kill other workers within the factory. So there's a lot of those kind of ideas going on here. It is very anti-war, and perhaps comes out of the lions led by donkeys argument, although we don't really get that, because we are particularly looking at the people with the idea of Hiram Maxim. It is somebody who is making an awful lot of money and getting an awful lot of prestige out of a weapon that is very devastating against soldiers, although it has to be said that the British didn't have quite as many machine guns as the Germans did in the First World War, because they want the two sides. It is concentrating on Hiram Maxim as this person who's an American who's transplanted himself over to Britain and got himself a knighthood, which he's rather proud of, and he's proud of making money and making bullets and killing people. And you have Fritz Haber, who seems to want to do it almost out of compassion, you know, wants to kill people quickly to get the war over quickly, and thinks that that kind of works. But is also somebody who, as the blurb says, he's Jewish, so that the consequences, because one of the consequences of using gas as a warfare is perhaps using gas against civilians and ordinary people, which, of course, is something that happened 25 years after Fritz Haber started using gas. So it's some very interesting history in both senses, the history of the story they're telling, but also the history of this particular production and Tony Harrison's ability to create plays. I mean, I think he is not been too successful in recent years. I mean, particularly we remember plays like, which I think is the last major play that he had put on, but certainly with plays which Pratt could have done, like The Trackers of Oxyrhynchus, or indeed The Oresteia, which was his great National Theatre three-part play, which was wonderful to watch and really exciting to see way back when. That's something that worked really well. But I mean, he is perhaps a poet more than a playwright, but he obviously has a feeling for this particular subject and wants to talk about these people who are essentially scientists and engineers, but are making it easier for those who want to kill. And it's interesting to talk about that conflict.
Yes, I think absolutely the war effort and the way it's captured and described and discussed in this piece is quite interesting. Whether it's actually an accurate characterization of any of the people portrayed in it is another matter, but I don't think that's my purpose of the piece. And so for what it sets out to achieve, it does it quite effectively, I think.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the Azzetta named London Theatre Podcast page on Facebook, on the web we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you, goodbye.